The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chowderhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerkers Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
The professor is in. Send your questions for Professor Kevin Gutzman to constitution@veritasradionetwork.com.
The familiar strains of the old Constitution theme from the fame of Our Fathers. Welcome aboard. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Constitution Hour radio broadcast featuring Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. I'm your host and moderator. Although some think I'm a M moderator. Mike Church here, host of the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel from 8 to 11 a.m.-ish every weekday morning. If you have missed any of the previous episodes of the Constitution Hour, remember you can download all 20-plus episodes now as part of a Founders Pass membership. Go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com and sign up for a Founders Pass membership today by the month or by the year for as little as 23 cents per day. It's all online at VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Don't forget to download our app for just $1.99 for Android, iPhone, and Windows phones. It's the easiest way to listen to the Crusade Channel. Now, to the Constitution Hour for this week. We are right just 1 week or 2 weeks away from the Republican National Campaign, which will convene in Cleveland, Ohio, I believe, and then followed shortly thereafter by the Democrat Convention. And at the Republican convention, one assumes that candidate Trump will be nominated. No one knows who the vice presidential nominee will be just yet. But there are a host of issues in and around the use or non-use of the U.S. Constitution that we can talk about with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, who is standing by. Kevin, happy Independence Week to you. How are you?
Well, Mike, how are you?
I am well, and it is a very hot July here thus far in Louisiana, and I imagine that the rhetoric of the presidential campaign is about to make July even hotter and August unbearable. I suppose we could start today with one of the most obvious issues, and that is, even if we were just to analyze or examine just the visual portion, or just what we know about former President Bill Clinton boarding an aircraft that has the now Attorney General of the United States, who he just happened to have appointed back in 1999, while a case that concerns his wife is in front of the Injustice Department. This kind of smells, doesn't it?
Well, I have to say, I think the matter had already been decided by then. You recall that she had already announced by then that she would go along with the FBI's recommendation. So I think it's pretty clear she already knew what the FBI's recommendation was going to be. But I think what's happened in the last few days has underscored our past assertions that Alexander Hamilton was completely wrong about the Constitution. That is, his suggestion on June 18th, 1787, basically the entire day in the Philadelphia Convention, about the form the Constitution and the government ought to take, was absolutely awful. Recall the centerpiece of that was that we should have a president who served for life. Imagine, if you will, Bill Clinton as president for life. there'd be some serious serving going on. Or imagine Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton for life. So it seems to me an awful prospect, and at least this way, we get to decide every few years. Are we fed up yet? If we're not, well, I guess we put up with some more, but if we are, we can defenestrate these people. And that's, of course, exactly what I feel like doing. I'm being rhetorical.
Right,
Mr. Service agent, I'm only being rhetorical. However, it's clear that a president for life is a terrible idea, and I'm glad we avoided it.
Well, we didn't avoid the rest of Hamilton's, or all the rest of Hamilton's ideas. Now, we're still stuck with an awful lot of Hamiltonian components in the federal system. But it seems to me that regardless of who it is that's in the executive office, and you know, I've been talking about this for over a decade now, regardless of who the occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is, it doesn't seem as though there is a recognizable limit to the extent of their powers. And if there is, well, then they just tend to ignore it and just say, well, that was then, this is now. And I wonder, you're the historian here, how is it that a written constitution could be written to anticipate this and then maybe provide a remedy for it?
Well, of course, the first check on ill behavior by people in public office is the suffrage. So people have to decide, I don't want this. Notice that a lot of the establishment Republican Party has told us by its posture in this current election season that it really doesn't care about law at all. So Mr. Trump stands up and says, I am flabbergasted that we have immigration laws, and they're not only not energetically enforced, but they are flouted with a wink and a nod from the establishment in the Republican Party. And a lot of Republicans say, that's outrageous. How can you say John McCain's not a hero? How could you make fun of Jeb! Exclamation point. How could you say that George W. Bush was not the ideal president? And there are some of them endorsing Hillary or saying that, well, I don't really think there's much difference, or I don't like when he attacks Fox News personalities or whatever the kind of the trivial excuse they're giving for wanting to keep this system rolling. And it seems to me that the first thing that he said amounts to this. We have a lot of our laws that are just being ignored. And this is, of course, what the FBI director told us he stood for yesterday. Hillary Clinton violated the law. Well, we're not going to seek an indictment of her, but I don't want people to understand that if they did this, they wouldn't be indicted. Really? Really? So, yeah, that, I think, should spur anybody with a lick of sense, and I am somewhat skeptical about the share of the population that is these days, but I think anybody with a lick of sense would say, you know, I've had about enough of Obama, and I've had enough of Hillary, and the only viable alternative is Trump, so that's what I'm going for.
Well, you know, I was reading a piece from J.D. Vance in the New York Times last Sunday, and I had J.D. on the radio show this morning, and I had to chuckle and think about you, because in his piece about the bad religion of white middle-class America, I think was the title of the piece, I don't have it, the bad faith of the white working class, he mentioned one of your favorite characters that I think is at the center of this this lack of concern on the average voter. And he actually mentioned Jonathan Gruber, the famous Obama apparatchik, who gives us the term that you like to use, Gruber voters. So it seems to me that the Clintons and the Obamas just seem to be able to corral or appeal to enough Gruber voters to continue the heresy or to continue the grift, don't you think?
Well, never let it be said that I have downplayed the stupid people phenomenon. You know, clearly there are a lot of stupid people, and Madison was asked in the Virginia James Madison was asked in the Virginia Ratification Convention, well, how is it that you can tell us that you think the average voter is going to be an adequate check? How can they be counted on to choose senators and to choose the president ultimately? And he said, look, if I'm going to say I believe in Republican government, I have to say that ultimately I'm going to have to count on the voters. What is your alternative? Do you want to have a hereditary Senate as in Venice? Do you want to have a hereditary autocrat as in Russia? Do you want to have somebody who's chosen by the College of Cardinals as in the Vatican City? What do you want? You know, this is a republic. So, yeah, it's true that we can lament the choices that are made by the people who are manipulated by these completely unethical types. My other favorite is, of course, David Axelrod, who in his unctuous way explained that, well, of course, Obama had to lie in his memoir about his position on homosexuality and quote-unquote marriage because he had said what he really thought about it. People wouldn't have voted for him. And then Axelrod, you know, spends a lot of his time going around saying, I want to make the system work for people, really, because what you actually stand for is lying to get votes, and you've explained and not even seemed to be the least bit abashed about it. So I think those people deserve all the obloquy we can heap upon them, but bottom line is we have a chance to get rid of these people. Hillary was already held in great disgust before, that is, Hillary Clinton was already held in great disgust before Mr. Comey's really pathetic performance, and if you listened to what he said, you heard him detail her many, many violations of the federal statutes. I mean, there's just no doubt, and actually, not only that, but he more or less went through all of her campaign rhetoric and told you that it was untrue, you know, that she didn't forward anything that was marked as classified when she received it. He enumerated the things that she had done that with. She didn't use more than one server. Well, that wasn't true. She didn't have only one device, as she said. She on and on and on, you know. And so I think that if people heard this and weren't persuaded, I don't know how to explain them, but I'm sure there are going to be a considerable number of people who say, all right, that's enough. That's enough. They're, you know, so I think that's enough. And frankly, I think the fact they feel perfectly free just to lie to get people to vote for them, and that's what they do. Let's stop pussyfooting around about that, too. Why not just say they are liars?
Yes.
There's no other word for it. They are liars. Lying is what they do. They send out their graduate speechwriters and political aides and campaign managers and so on who then explain that, well, they had to lie, and they laugh about it, and they get rich off it. Gruber and Axelrod aren't the only two, but they're the most obvious and shameful too, and you know, ultimately it comes down to the complete absence of character in both Clintons and Obama.
This is the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. If you'd like to write us and have a question answered here on the Constitution Hour, simply go to veritasradionetwork.com and use the contact page or tab at the top of any page and send us an email, or you can just find Kevin on Facebook. He is at Kevin Gutzman, or on the Twitter, at Kevin Gutzman. And I'd just like to share with you former U.S. Attorney Andrew C. McCarthy, who successfully prosecuted the blind sheikh who conspired to have the World Trade Center blown up in February of 1993, what his take on this was. And he basically says that Comey invented or added intent to the statute, that Congress did not include intent. In other words, it doesn't matter why or what your intent was when you peddled or allowed to be peddled or stolen or shared or whatever classified security, top-level security documents. It's irrelevant. So they didn't specify that a prosecutor would have to prove intent. But Director Comey basically said that he could find no sinister or criminal intent here. Well, McCarthy read the statute. There's no provision for intent. So he did write the law. And I'm thinking, wow, this sounds familiar. This is what John Roberts did when he reviewed the Affordable Care Act, isn't it?
Well, it is. Actually, there are two different parts of the statute. One does require intent, one doesn't. And she just over and over again violated the gross negligence section, you know. And
right.
People can easily get wrap their minds around the idea that you could commit a criminal act without intent by thinking of this. It's a common kind of case that people consider when they're students in law school. It involves a public hazard. So let's say that you buy a house, it has a swimming pool in the back, you decide you don't want to live in it, but although you leave the house empty, you leave water in the pool. Some kid in the neighborhood comes over to your house and drowns in your pool. You're not absolved from responsibility for that kid's death by the fact that you didn't intend for him to die.
That's right.
Or you didn't intend for him to swim in your pool. This is foreseeable, right? So you were grossly negligent in not taking reasonable steps to keep people from getting into that swimming pool. And that's the same kind of thing as Mrs. Clinton did. She did exactly that. She did it many times. And I think the other thing that's omitted, because, of course, he didn't know, that is, Director Comey didn't know, is why did she have this entire system? Why did she buy numerous servers? Why did she pay hundreds of thousands of dollars? Why did she have, unlike her description of it, several different companies running this system for her? What was the whole point of this? Well, you could say part of it is she had this aide whom she had been ordered not to hire at the State Department by the people at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to have him employed in this, but I think it goes beyond that. I think it's pretty obvious it has to do with the shakedown operation that is the Clinton Foundation.
That's now, right.
Think of it this way. If Bill Clinton has been able to charge, and Hillary Clinton has been able to charge $300,000 to speak for half an hour while she was the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, how much are they going to charge for a Bill Clinton speech once she is the president? He is going to be traveling to Uzbekistan to speak for half an hour for $1 million. And this will be happening five times a week, right? And we're still going to have every Democratic operative and all the Democratic news media, but I repeat myself, saying, well, there's nothing wrong with that. So the Clintons are being, you know, given wherever they go, they're being given a big fat check, and we're supposed to think, well, that's because Bill Clinton has such magical wisdom to impart, right? If somebody in Saudi Arabia wants to hear anybody in the world speak for half an hour for $1 million, it's going to be Bill Clinton. And that makes sense that they would pay him $1 million to speak for half an hour.
No, it
but
doesn't.
I put it to you, that is not correct.
It's
Bill
not.
Bill Clinton has never said anything that wasn't just soporific in a public address in the last 20 years. Have you heard the man speak recently?
Yes.
He's semi-coherent. And when he is coherent, he's saying nothing. He sounds as if he's campaigning. Or sometimes, actually, he does make the mistake of defending his own record as president, which, of course, his wife is running against. So that he's capable of doing, but it seems to me that when he does that, he betrays that there's some kind of mental degeneration going on there, too. So anyway, I think it does not pass the laugh test for anybody who's not an American liberal that in the entire world, the speech that somebody in Brunei wants to pay $300,000 to hear for half an hour is from Bill Clinton. It just doesn't work. Nobody believes that. But if his wife is Secretary of State or the presumptive Democratic nominee for president or coming up president, well, yeah, they'd like to put $1 million in their pocket. Sure, because they know that, well, she's going to help them American uranium stockpile to Russia. You know, honestly, how stupid do you have to be a Democrat?
Well, how stupid do you have to be to continue to believe that there's nothing untoward, that there's nothing crooked or sinister going on here? I mean, as I said, even when we started this segment here, the Constitution Hour, with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be, when we started the segment, I said, just even the optics, Just the fact that they don't think that they can be or will be held accountable for any of this is, I think, as offensive and as great a slight as any federal statute that they may have broken. There once upon a time there was the principle of ethics that would rule over these sorts of affairs, and we seem to have forgotten that notion. That brings me to this. I don't know if you have read this lately, or if you recall reading it when you did, but I'm sure that you at some time in your storied literary career that you have read Forrest MacDonald's E Pluribus Unum, The Formation of the American Republic. Well, in the preface to this book, MacDonald pretty much explained what you and I are talking about here, and I thought I would share it with you and let that be the springboard for the conversation in the next segment. It's not a very long excerpt, and it goes something to this effect. On the other hand, a condition inherent in British North America dictated that if the founding could be accomplished, the necessary myths would create themselves. For Americans reckon values in the marketplace and by consensus, unlike the Europeans, who reckon them through traditional institutions and by absolute standards. Now, one of the peculiarities of the new American way is that when contests of ideas arise, the view held by the winning side comes in time to be regarded as the unqualified truth, the only possible view. Indeed, all subsequent battles must begin with the outcomes of earlier battles as unquestioned premises. And then he gives as an example, a few Americans espoused the doctrines about to be set forth in the Declaration of Independence, and hosts of divergent opinions were perfectly tolerable. And of course, John Dickinson held one of those opinions all the way up until July the 3rd. But once the declaration was made, it became not only immoral, but virtually unthinkable to hold any other position. So we see this, I think, in something that you and I discuss here often on the Constitution Hour, and that is this legal jargon or this legal principle that is called stare decisis. Now, MacDonald may not have been directly talking about stare decisis, but he's talking about a stare decisis of sorts that kind of builds one myth to the next myth to the next myth. And perhaps that can help us explain why we're in the ethical and constitutional, and I'd say governmental, crisis that we're currently in. What say you?
Well, at some point, that explanation or that description of the American mind that he gives can't obtain. That is, it can't always be that whatever has been done by the previous regime becomes sacrosanct. And we know that when Obama became president, one of the chief things he had vowed to do was to undo the main initiative of the Bush administration. So, in general, I think that's true. We see it in a lot of people. On the other hand, I think for myself, probably for you, there are a lot of what people take for granted as significant positive steps in American history that we reject. I'd like to see uprooted. And so I guess that's, in that sense, if we want to say that his truism continues in effect, maybe I've rejected it myself. I don't think it's true. But one point I wanted to make, though, is I think what we're seeing here is a validation. And I've been thinking about this provision a lot for months. I think we see a validation in the Obama administration of the wisdom of the natural-born citizen requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Because this implies that you have some emotional, that your identity as an American has some emotional purchase upon you, right? It means something to you. You weren't just accidentally born here of your father who was happy to go back to whatever nasty place he was from, and then spend your life trying to undermine the United States, right? That or, fundamentally transform it. Which, by the way, in case people haven't heard me ask this before, Mike, if you love your wife, would you say you'd like to fundamentally transform her? I mean, I don't think you're going to want to fundamentally transform your kids or your friends or your alma mater or anything that you like. So the vow to do that, I think people took as kind of, well, I want to make change of. This is a really, it sounded like an echo of Bill Clinton's rhetoric from 1992, but I think it wasn't. I think it was an anti-American vow, a pledge or promise, however you want to look at it, and it's ongoing. It's just every element of our tradition that we're not going to like. So, rule of law, who needs the rule of law? You know what, it'd be kind of fun to contradict the idea of the rule of law just because that's something we can contradict. It's almost satanic in the sense of being antinomian, you know? And if St. John's Gospel begins by saying, in the first place, there was the reason for everything, which is one way of translating his Greek.
Okay.
In the first place, there was the rationale. Well, if you're constantly kicking against reason, if you're constantly kicking against right, if you're constantly kicking against the explanation of things that people accept, then that's counter to God. That's counter to truth. That's counter to, a conscious conscience's sense of the way things ought to work. And that's come to be the way I understand Valerie Jarrett and Axelrod and Gruber and their patron.
And Obama. Well,
one.
Coming up next year on Wednesday evenings on the Crusade Channel, we have our Philosophy of Perennis discussion. Right now we're studying the polemics course, Modern Philosophers. So I was going to jump and chime in. The
password is Hegelian.
It's very Hegelian. You might say you could interject several modern quote philosophers close quote, but Hegel certainly comes to mind. Heidegger comes to mind. Kant comes to mind. Of course, Kant would be the godfather of these clowns. And Nietzsche comes to mind. They all have one thing in common: they're all wrong, horribly and dreadfully wrong. It would be a stretch, though, if we were to say that Barack Obama or David Axelrod are, you know, say what you will about Hegel and about the German philosophers, but I don't think that they were Dummkopfs. They were just wrong. I think that Axelrod is pretty much a Dummkopf. Well, why don't we pick up on this on the other side? Because I know that Constitution Hour fans probably want to hear the latest of Professor Gutzman's take about Paul Ryan and the latest machinations in Congress about sit-ins, about, I don't know, there's all sorts of things. How about the term limits, maybe, as a remedy for some of the maladies that we see in the federal government? We can talk about all of it, and we will. Remember, this is the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, and if you like what you're hearing on the Crusade Channel today, why not support our crusade and become a Founders Pass member and gain instant streaming and download access to every episode of this show and all the others on the Crusade Channel, including The Mike Church Show and The Suzanne Option featuring Suzanne Sherman. You can subscribe to the Founders Pass for as little as 23 cents per day. You can also choose between a monthly or yearly membership. And during the month of July, for every yearly membership, we will ship you an autographed copy of Humility of Heart, signed by this new edition's editor, that be yours truly, for free. Don't cost nothing. But that's not all. It's a special free gift. We are also offering beautiful handmade wooden kitchen cutting boards from our sponsor, McClureBlock.com. For becoming a founding father or crusader level member, or for making a $500 cash donation to our monthly crowdfunding campaign. So, folks, please consider joining our crusade today and becoming a Founders Pass member by going to VeritasRadioNetwork.com/join or call 866-483-3833. Constitution Hour will return right after this here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. Radio the way it should be.
If Patrick Henry were still alive, he would listen to the Constitution Hour featuring Professor Kevin Gutzman. Debuting at noon Central here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.